No matter how long I do this rock and roll thing, playing in this rock and roll game, no matter how much more music I've been exposed to, and no matter how far our band has taken us, I find myself knee-jerking back to my 14-year-old self. It's a world where Kiss rules and Metallica is number one. When discussions hover around the latest socio-political news items, I can lob over an opinion or two. But nothing gets me more pumped when I find a kindred spirit who, no matter what is going on in the world, would rather talk about Metallica. I can talk about Metallica till the cows come home. I can sit there with someone and discuss the boring trivialities of one of their songs or one of their albums into the wee hours. And I have, many times. My guess has been, if I like discussing them and listening to people talk about them, then maybe others would too. A few years ago, Jerry Seinfeld started an online series called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. It's a charming little show whose premise is summarized in its title, except that Seinfeld has a lot more money to put into production and to show off his impressive car collection. It's a neat little platform, but I knew if I was to do a similar show, it could only be about Metallica. Or Kiss too, but I mean, you know, Metallica for this episode. Almost immediately after I watched the first few episodes of Seinfeld's show, I thought of Josh and Jason Diamond, the Diamond Brothers of the band Puny Human, and who have directed many of our videos and our documentary, Bring on the Mountain, not to mention their appearance on episode number 86 of this podcast. In between takes, during breaks, and while having dinners, our talks would always lead back to a discussion about Metallica. Many theories, opinions, and ideas would be hurled back and forth, so I naturally thought of them first. Then, of course, Jim Rota, someone I met through the Diamonds, singer of Fireball Ministry, producer of Dave Grohl's Sound City documentary and Sonic Highway's HBO TV show, not to mention two past appearances on this podcast as well, episode number 78, and earlier this year, episode number 92 with Scott Reeder. Put those three guys in a room together with me to talk about Metallica, and you'll have a very opinionated lot indeed. I myself have gotten into a lot of trouble for my opinions on the band over the years, mainly from newbie Metallica fans who don't realize that true fandom for Metallica isn't without a hardline opinion. That's the natural fallout for a band when they've been around for over 30 years like Metallica have. When you truly love something, you can recognize its faults, you can criticize its faults, and still continue to love it. It's their peaks and valleys that endears them to you and makes you love them even more, warts and all. When I love a band as much as I love Metallica, it isn't blind adoration, it isn't unconditional like some hypnotized zombie, it's filled with passion and zest that mirrors the emotions that the band's music stirred inside me. So to all the internet haters who rammed my Twitter feed when Blabbermouth posted some supposedly negative tweet I wrote about Metallica one day, I say, go fuck yourself. I've been listening to Metallica when you were listening to the Backstreet Boys. Last September, while appropriately on Motorhead's motorboat cruise ship, fates conspired to have the Diamond Brothers, Jim Rota, and myself all on the motorboat cruise together. This, after all agreeing a year previous to do something similar to Seinfeld, where we talk about Metallica, so we had to do this. Of course, trying to film it would have been a nightmare, so we chose to keep the idea and bring it on the podcast. Now, even though this was recorded a year ago, I kept pushing this episode back for a number of reasons, mainly because I wanted to space out Jim Rota's appearances and wanted to space out the podcasts recorded on the motorboat. One thing led to another and almost a full year went by. So, look, I'm sorry about that, but I think the wait was well worth it. However, if you don't like Metallica, I gotta be honest with you here. This episode will be boring. I don't usually say this, but if that's the case, you should skip this episode. If you do like the band, well, enjoy this. It's four guys in a cabin on a boat wanting nothing more than to talk about Metallica. As previously stated on the other Motorboat podcast episodes, there is a noticeable hum, and that's just the natural hum of the cruise ship as we sailed the seas. I should mention that this episode also marks Jim Rhoda's third appearance on the podcast, and thus he joins Barrett Martin, Duff McKagan, Damien Abraham, Wade McNeil, Brendan Canning, Ole Brulin, Nick Flanagan, JC, and myself in the Black Coffee Brigade, the podcast's small little group of people who have appeared on it three times or more. So, congratulations, Jim. Also, thanks to Skull Candy Headphones and Blue Mic Microphones for their support of the podcast. This podcast supports Chino Locos restaurants for making fish burritos stuffed with chow mein noodles. Thanks to you for listening, and perhaps you've left a rating or a review on the iTunes store, so thanks for that too. And you know what? Thanks to Metallica for being the subject of this episode and for being such a great fucking band. Josh Diamond, Jim Rhoda, and Jason Diamond are this episode's guests on the official Danko Jones podcast. This smokes. I love this episode. And it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-hotel over free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Jimmy in from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. Down.
Why, me have to tell you, the Danko Jones podcast are the best podcast me ever hear in my life. Me and my girlfriend, them love to get around the computer and listen every single episode. It fantastic. You know, so them turn me on to so much exciting rock and roll band. Rock and roll people and some funny ass comedian. Yo, Nick Flanagan hilarious. And love to hear it up with Danko. What? You never hear Danko Jones podcast before? How are you there? Yay! What kind of rock you live under? Drop everything you do and go and go listen right now. Better yet, why you not make me come with you and listen? Me hear every episode already, but you don't know, so it sound even better the second time around. Inspirational, educational, motivational, Danko Jones podcast. Fierce!
I guess we should preface this with, like, okay, we're all big Metallica fans. So whatever we say about the band, I don't care, like, who hears this and takes offense to it. Know that we're doing this because we love the band.
Yeah, absolutely. That was like my, this is the, Metallica is the band that taught Jason and I how to play rhythm guitar. You know, like sitting down with the Master of Puppets tab book and just sitting in the living room and just ripping through it again and again and again.
I don't know how to practice otherwise.
Yeah, that's all.
I can only play along with records, really.
Yeah,
I don't have the capacity to sit and be like, no, just put on a record that I like. I'll play along with it,
and that's how you learn. So yeah, so we're all big Metallica fans. So no matter what we say, know that we love this band.
Which is why we can hate and love them at the same time.
I think you're.
Like you do with people that you really
love. You really love. Because you just never write them off. Every single time they'll put out something, you'll check them. You'll check in and check
them. You try.
Out. Yeah. So I don't even know where to start because the job was on me to come up with bullet points. And of course, just like a homework assignment, I didn't get it done.
I don't know if any of you have seen it, but, you know, a good friend of mine, you know, because it's common nowadays, especially with the internet, for everybody to share their opinions as if people care about them, which for the most part people don't. but it's moved away from the internet into now real life, where people will constantly come up to you and tell you what they think of something, to the with a degree of you know,
faux expertise.
Yeah. Someone should just wear a like button on their shirt so you can just push it and make it go away.
And
I like it.
And a friend of mine had seen and watched the Metallica concert movie, Through the Never.
Oh, mm-hmm. I saw it.
And he was very angry. He was very upset. He was very sad. All of the above. So I was like, well, I need to go watch it. So I watched it on Netflix. I was working. We were on location working, and I watched it by myself. And when it was over, I thought to myself, okay, how many bands today are taking their own money and making entertainment for their fans?
It's true.
Okay, I'm like...
In 3D.
Right. Either way, I'm like, okay, one. Pretty much. Maybe two. I said, number two. Putting this into perspective of what a young Metallica fan would be into right now, this movie is awesome. It's exactly what... like, a 42-year-old man such as myself having an opinion about this movie is irrelevant.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like, that. The whole point is to get a 16-year-old kid into Metallica.
Who doesn't get a chance to see them because they don't play very often until they have new records.
Right. And who also needs to be... you know, entertained on another level because this person at 16 or 17 today, they've been exposed to things that when we were 16 or 17, the stuff of science fiction movies.
Exactly. My problem with it, and I agree with you 100%, my 42-year-old opinion of it, is that I totally get the concert stuff, and it was shot awesomely, and, you know, I have my own.
You said it was a good set list.
It was actually a good set list, and it's just the whole contrived thing of like, oh no, a piece of the set fell. Everybody okay? We're gonna do this garage style now, and like just the way it used to be. And I don't know. I got a little bit of I brought my douche blanket to the theater with me, right?
Because you're an old, my cynical man.
That is true. But my bigger problem was, and I get all that, and it's fine, it is what it is. But they added this whole, you know, storyline of Dane DeHaan trying to find this bag that potentially has Cliff Burton's soul in it or something. I don't know how you explain
schlocky.
It. But there wasn't enough of it. Like, it's like, they had some, then a song, and they had some, then a song, and then like six songs go by, and back to it, and you're like, wait, what? Oh, we have a story? Like, I don't know, I felt like they could have balanced that better, and then they would have had me a little more because the story was kind of cool, and the way they ended the movie. Did you see it, Danko?
Yeah, I did.
I loved the Orion at the end was great with the bag and the, you know, I was in at that point.
Did Robert Trujillo have a Band-Aid on the back of his neck like Marcellus Wallace?
Where they sucked his soul out.
This is what, remember, I went off top, off the record, or at least on the record, because they're sitting here now. This is, we're talking about how you guys can take it to a level just in one statement. Bam! Case in point.
Then in the Eisenstein sequence, there was a...
I think it's going to be a tag team thing. But I think we're all agreeing here.
Yeah.
I didn't see the movie, so I have zero...
But
I really liked it a lot.
Yeah, because you were like, I'll be 15 right now.
Yeah. And you have to approach everything you do from here on in with that mindset.
Of course.
And the same goes for Death Magnetic. I love Death Magnetic, and then when I went up to a friend of mine, I go, what do you think of the new album? He goes, no Master of Puppets. I'm like, well, yeah, because you've been living with it for a quarter century, and you've got all these life experiences that are attached to
it. I don't think that's true. I think if the record, every band has a peak. After the peak, it's either really far down or it's just a little down. Mm-hmm. But there's a peak, and I think we can all agree that Master Puppets was the peak.
Yeah.
And then it's been a little kind of bumpy road from there. Yeah. But
the problem with Master Puppets is also the greatest thing about it. It's that no one had done that.
Of course.
At that point, and, you know, that kind of music...
They
kind of
did it on the album before.
But not to that level where they brought it, like, you know, to the arena. You know, like, it was, you know, like, all the...
I see what you mean.
Yeah, it's like a perfect storm. You know, like, you write pretty much three great records back to back. Any one of those three records could have taken them to the level that they got, all of us in this room having been in bands, you know, I talk about this all the time with people. It's like it could have happened to them on the record before, no problem. That record is just as good as Master of Puppets. It's just that the timing and getting the Aussie tour and getting those things and all that stuff that happens now, looking back and knowing it's how this cultural touch
points. Yeah, you're riding the wave of
art, stuck to it.
Yeah, you're riding the music, that kind of music at the time was peaking, and they were sort of on the crest.
Also 1986, which is like the
which
year.
Is what Dan Tanko just said. Like, you get attached to that romantic idea that they, you know, like, you know, the four fucking talisman, we could take this over their heads now. The four talisman in the box were like glowing at their brightest, if you will. And, you know, like, but like, that's not what happened. Like, it was just all those things added up to that moment. And that's how everything is, like, you know, any band is that way. Guns N' Roses is that way. You know, Nirvana is that way. Yeah. Like, anything that happened like that.
Right place, right time, yeah. Good music,
good just sort of everything. Songs, yeah, everything just, had to be, yeah. And then it was like kaboom. So, you know, like everyone in this room, we could go around in a circle and touch on records that are just as good as all the biggest records that have ever happened that no one's ever heard. But it was just because, you put that record out at a time when the people didn't need that record.
Yeah.
So therefore,
yeah, exactly.
Enjoy working at UPS.
Sorry. Delivering the records of bands that are making it.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel, you know.
And now you fly an Amazon drone.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, I saw this. Danko and I met this woman upstairs, and she was from Long Island, and we took a picture with her, and she was saying. I said, "Oh, where are you from?" She said, "Farmingdale." And I was like, "Oh, I went to a lot of shows in Nassau Coliseum." And she was like, "Oh, yeah." She was, "I saw Metallica, Ozzy there." And I was like, "In '86, I saw that too." And she was like, "Oh, no, my dad's the best." But I remember that night, I went with my mom, and my mom, we watched the show. My mom just took me to shows because I hadn't met somebody else's older brother yet that could go to shows. So my mother had to take me, and my mom took myself.
Yeah, but your mom was the kind of person that you wouldn't mind going to.
Yeah, yeah.
I was gonna say, like, I can't picture me and my mom going to.
That's the difference. Like, you're not there. Like, you're not there with your mom in an almost famous style where she's like nerding out from the, like, whistling at you from the station wagon.
Mom's
she's like there with you, like, having fun.
Dads of One Direction.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Not like that. But after the show, I remember, like, we watched both bands, and my mom was just like, she's like, the band that played before Ozzy was way better. And I was like, you know.
That's
like
a cool mom. I mean.
But totally, like, not, like, no.
No pretense.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't know this music. Yeah. I'm going this better.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what was better based on nothing. Like, no pretense.
Totally.
And it was a trip. I'll never forget that. And, like, you're looking back on that now, thinking about that, just being like, they were that good. Like, they were that good where they were. That band was more stoked to be playing with their, like, one of their ultimate heroes of their entire lives than anyone in that whole place. And they blew him off the fucking stage. Like, it was night and day. Crazy.
That was, what is that, Ultimate Sin?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
Which is a
slight waning period in Ozzy's
peak. Hey, speak for yourself.
I like,
dude,
Ultimate
whatever.
Sin, but I'm saying, you know,
I'm not
it's,
a big fan at
that
all.
That was the pop that, like, just, again. Yeah. Just
I'm in. I'm
he
in.
Just
dude, I'm in. I'm in 100%. Dude,
Black Rain.
The Phil Soussan, Randy Castillo rhythm section alone. That's a podcast unto itself.
The Tammy Faye Baker Ozzy era.
Yeah. Listen.
Of the black and yellow stripe sequence.
Yeah, Matrix trench
coat. Somebody. Oh, Dave Grohl. Not to, you know, be that dick, but. He showed me a picture one day where he was at some thing, like, he was doing some interview somewhere, and it was, like, at a prop house, and he sends me this picture of him standing next to the giant, like, Ozzy, like...
Demon thing from Ultimate Sin?
Yeah, like, the tour that he came down on, like, when it opened up, and then Ozzy was in it. Yeah. It was like, I don't know, like, mutant Ozzy. Yeah. Like a giant mutant Ozzy head.
Ozzy head with wings or whatever.
And then it, like, And then it, like, came down from the lighting rig, and it opened up, and Ozzy came out of it, and he was just so happened to be somewhere where that thing was, like, sitting in a warehouse. Right. And I was like, holy shit! I was like, sit in the seat! Yeah. Did he get your picture taken in the seat?
Did he?
No. Because he was like, what the hell is that? And I was like, oh.
Why is that still around? I mean, it's awesome that it is, but, like,
dude, he's like, I gotta throw that away.
It's almost 30 years old, that thing.
I bet we could rent that.
Totally. Well, I bet you could buy it.
That, yeah, probably. Like Rollins has the Thin Lizzy. He bought that sign.
That's oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
That, yeah, the lit one.
Oh,
the
oh so wow.
They should sell that off.
Dude, John, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but John works for Kiss, you know, in town. In L.A., he does all their in-town
from
cartage.
Fireball.
Yeah, John, the guy that plays drums. He has a company, cartage company he owns, and his company does all the in-town cartage for Kiss. And he's very respectful of them and doesn't ever say anything, but I know he goes to their warehouse all the time, and I know the things that are in that warehouse, like the things that you would want
to
see.
But he goes to Mecca on a regular basis.
Yeah, he's like, whatever, it's work. Yeah, he's like, I don't know what he's talking about. But like the light up, I'm sure there's a KISS light up.
That he's walked by.
Oh, yeah, like 600,000 times. Yeah. You could throw it in a box truck.
There's a bulb out in the middle of the eye.
Right.
And it doesn't move his smallest toe.
No, he's like, shit, I'm late. You know, whatever. He's like, that's what he's
saying. They need people. They need to hire people. They need to surround themselves with people like that. Not like people like us.
No,
like,
of course not.
There's no work gets done.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
he says that all the time.
Look at that.
He's like, it's one of the hardest bands to like work, like to find people to work for because there's too many fans.
Too many fans.
Like, where it's like, the guys that want to work for them obviously know who they are and love them too much.
Well, now we got to find the warehouse that has the Master Puppets stage set.
Yeah, with
crosses.
Yeah. There's a couple things. There's a few Maiden stage pieces that if I, you know, had fuck you money. A couple of fucking Wasp stage pieces. Trust me. Oh, my God. Don't even get me started.
I did get you started on Twitter. Was it you that we were going back, like, just incorporating Wasp song titles in each tweet?
So good.
I'm going to lay out my theory of Metallica and why the records have gone up and then back down.
Which is a theory most of us agree with.
I think we might agree with, but no one has to agree until, you know, I won't blanket say everyone agrees before I start.
Of course.
So the perfect storm happens of Mustaine, Hetfield, Ulrich, and Burton post McGovney.
Yes.
And
for a very brief
and for that brief perfect storm moment, they write a ridiculous amount of riff songs and content, which filter down through all three records. Even though Mustaine doesn't have credit on Master Puppets, we know
Leper Messiah
that he wrote songs and riffs all the way through Puppets.
They were using stuff.
So you have Kill 'Em All, which is a full those four guys tunes, right? Then you have Ride the Lightning, which is the more mixture of Mustaine weirdness, but starting to get into the Burton, really heavy Burton influence. And then you have...
And Hammett.
And Hammett, some. But then you have Master of Puppets, which is the dregs of Mustaine riffs. And I don't mean that in a qualitatively, just in quantity, right? And then you get to Master of Puppets, which is mostly Burton influence. I think we can agree that it's more the orchestration and the counterpoint and the classical-y kind of stuff in there.
Well, it's also just more refined.
And
the
more
songs
refined.
Are more refined.
Yeah. And Mustaine is not a refined dude. He's like a fucking balls on the dashboard at going 100 miles an hour.
Well, and they were all super young, too.
Yeah,
So, like, they were just like, I came up with this cool part. We have to figure out how to, like, one of the things that you love so much about, like, what do you call it? What the fuck is that song?
What?
This is like
on Kill 'Em All.
Oh yeah.
The fuck am I singing?
I know.
Phantomlord.
Yeah. The thing about Phantomlord that's so rad is it's like 26 songs put together.
Yeah.
But like,
but it all works.
Yeah. And but like that's how like 18-year-olds think.
So then at the end of my theory, you get to Justice for All, which is No Mustaine and the Dregs
of Burton.
Quantitatively of Burton. And then it's just, you look at every record
it's
from
Hetfield
then on,
and Ulrich left
there
their own devices.
No similarly quality riff, I don't think, Jason, on any record post that. Post Justice for All.
I don't know.
Not to the level.
So what are you saying?
Hetfield? I'm saying that I think that Mustaine and Burton's influence was strong enough to make the four of them the perfect storm. Not that Hetfield and Ulrich are less than.
Yeah, but
I think that was the.
But you can argue that. When that was all gone, that's when they became like
but I'm not
the biggest
band. But I'm not talking about. But I'm not talking about success.
Right.
I'm talking about, in my opinion, quality of music.
They became the biggest band in the world because of those albums, though. Because all the radio guys were wanting to play them. Because everyone was wearing the T-shirts from those three albums.
Yeah.
And it was
I mean, they had already built. They had built that base for themselves. They had the.
They broke the wall with one.
Do
like
you really
on
think
Justice,
Enter Sandman
like,
was the song to fucking break Metallica? It could have been anything. It could have been Happy Birthday.
It's not true.
Just packaging a 3-minute format.
But they made that choice by going with Bob Rock. We're going to the top.
And I'm not.
They're not getting.
I'm not
you know, Terry D to do their record with nobody.
I'm not denigrating.
I don't want a Corvette.
And that's,
I want a Ferrari.
And that's fine. And I'm not.
I want to look like the Cowardly
choices.
Lion. In a Ferrari.
I'm not denigrating those choices or saying that they shouldn't be the size band that they are because they should be this big if they only made those 3-4 records. Right.
Here's the thing. I've had this conversation a lot, especially with the King guys, because having worked on their record, you know, last year, you know, like, of course, we all can sit here at our age, I'll tell you this. This is the story that will sum this all up. I have a really good friend named Rob Schnaff, who's a producer. He did three of the biggest Elliott Smith records. He's like a total.
Did Beck, right?
Yeah, Beck. He's a genius. I think he would die if he ever heard me talking about him like this. The guy's incredible talent. An amazing guy. He's also from Jersey and like a super hard rock fan. Like he's the kind of guy that like will be like, "You ever heard that record Axis?" And you're like, "Oh my god, how do you know that?" Or like, "You know who's a really good fucking drummer? It's Bobby Caldwell." You know, like you're like, oh, "Okay, yeah, right," because that's what people say. So, but we were hanging out one night and we started talking about AC/DC, and he was like. What do you think their best record is? And again, he's about 10 years older than me. So he was like, I was like, well, I mean, there's my favorite record, and then there's their best record. And then his eyebrow really went up like, oh, you know, like, now tell me what you're going to say. I'm like, well, my favorite record is Power Age, but their best record is Back in Black.
That's exactly what I'd say.
And he was like, you're fucking wrong. And I was like, okay. And I was like, why? And he goes, because Brian Johnson's bullshit. And I was like, and then I took pause, and I said, okay, explain yourself. And it was like, he was there, that like, he was an AC/DC fan before Brian Johnson joined the band.
He had those 10 years. Yeah.
He was there. He heard AC/DC happen. Like, he heard it from, like, his Kill 'Em All was fucking High Voltage, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, he heard it. Like, that was the first thing he heard was High Voltage. So he's like, holy shit, this is the most amazing band ever. Bon Scott dies. They get a new singer.
And he's like, fuck
that's
this.
The biggest record they ever had. He's like, fuck that band. And I'm like, this is the exact parallel to my generation and Metallica.
Yeah, true.
Which you're just like.
It's true, but I'm not saying fuck that band, but there is a.
But you
there
did
is
at this, that point. At that point,
there is a distinct
we all sat in somebody's fucking Ford Bronco, in my case, Luke Littell's, the guy that got Impetigo on 8, the guy's armpit, and listened to fucking Enter Sandman on the single that he bought before it all came out. He put it on. We sat in the fucking Bennigan's parking on Morristown, New Jersey. I don't remember this day at all. And we just were like, fuck this band. Fuck them forever. That's it.
I was in my 19 year
it's
old.
Like the Kennedy assassination.
I was in my then 19 year old. I was 19. I was like in my girlfriend's parents' house in Nanuet or whatever. And I was like, oh, today's the day the new Metallica video. Like, I hadn't heard anything. And I went into her kitchen on her little tiny TV. and I turned on MTV, and within like 10 minutes it came on, and I just sat there like slack jawed, because not only is the song not that good, but the video is worse. The video is worse with the Now I Lay Me Down. When that part came on, I think I might have sharted myself.
But that's what made Carla Rhoda like Metallica.
Carla Rhoda can like Metallica. I was working.
By the way, that's my sister. I love you. I'm just using you as an example because you're normal.
I was working at Caroline Records in the warehouse, and I took the vinyl. I was like, oh, new Metallica record, it's out. And I went into the warehouse.
Smell the glove is out.
The record, and I'm like, oh. And I went home and put it on, and I was just like,
what happened? But you want to know something, guys? And I'll say it on this podcast because we're among friends and we got support here and we're all together. I felt the fucking same way when I heard fucking Injustice for All.
Really?
Like fucking that intro to Blackened happened and the fucking guitar orchestra, and you're like, holy shit, man. And then all of a sudden the fucking snare drum thing happens and they're like fucking full fucking speed, or like pretty like mid speed. Fast speed, and fucking like the first hit happens, and you're, where's the bass?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, why? You got a new bass player. I saw a picture of him.
And go listen to that record tomorrow. Oh, I know. When we leave, you'll be like, what the fuck happened?
Well, you
know,
our friend Ray Amico played bass. He recorded bass on the record and sent it to them.
With a sticker on the front.
Now with more bass.
And Hetfield referenced it in some article. He's like, yeah, some guy sent me a disc, you know, a CD with you know, even, and Newstead even was like, yeah, when we were going out on tour, I put that record on to like go back and practice my parts and realize I can play anything I want because
nobody knows what the fuck I was playing.
What was I doing?
But that goes back to my original theory point, which is, there were still good songs on that record, but it was the wane. You could feel the wane It wasn't the full drop off.
I like that record.
It wasn't the full drop off of the Black record.
The Black album, again, like at 42 years old, looking back on it now, like having been through the fucking ringer of this merciless business, like I cannot understand that record more. At this point,
Justice?
No, the Black album. I understand that record on the highest fucking level possible.
Well, that's a business level.
But they're at a point.
That's a different issue.
It's not even a business level. It is. Like,
that's a business. You're making it a business decision when you said, "Oh, well, I don't want to drive a Corvette. I want to drive this." That's a business and a money decision.
But the reality part is, it's like, I want this to last forever.
Yes.
I want this to be,
of course,
what I do for the rest of my life.
Which means we need to be played on the radio.
Exactly. MTV at that point was still rock. I'm not intimating
that they're disingenuously, if that's a word, writing those records. Yeah. They're pumped on those records. Those are their records. I'm not saying that they're doing it to make money and say, well, fuck it, we made the stuff we wanted to make, now we're going to make radio rock.
But that's they're also sick and tired of playing 7-minute songs. They wanted to get to the chorus as fast as possible.
And that's fine. I'm not saying that the decision was wrong. I just don't like that decision and where it went.
And I love,
and I'm happy that they're successful. No one deserves to be more successful than those dudes.
I have a totally different take on it. When Justice came out, I was so pumped on those three albums. They could have farted a record, and I would have loved Justice. And then when the Black album came out, I made myself like it.
Right.
And now, like, the time's passed. I can't... there's two songs I can listen to that. Holier Than Thou, and I can't even...
Of Wolf and Man or something?
To
me, after...
Through the Never, Savage Truth, I'm done. You're crazy.
But that's the flip. That's also the Hetfield flip.
You talk about a riff. Like, give me that riff once in my life. Tell me about it.
I'll fucking...
That's like the fucking riff in that one Pantera song. The fucking... I'm like... Why, God, didn't you give me that?
It's a wicked riff.
Southern riffs.
really loud. Perfect. Fuck you, Texas.
No, so, don't get me wrong. Sabba True is incredible. But
yeah, I get it. Like, it's so, like, you couldn't turn on, like, wherever I may roam. I remember I felt like that was the only video MTV had for a while. Like, yeah. Where you were like, you turned it on, you were like, wow, weird. That song's on again.
Well, yeah. Also, Wayne Isham was like the king of, like, anything he made, he could have pissed on fucking celluloid.
Yeah, and he did the Boys to Men in the Desert and then straight to Metallica.
But again, like, Perfect Storm. Like,
yeah, and they picked the right, they made the right decisions. Yeah. That's the guy.
But
right?
Even worse for me, because I can go back and I can forgive the Black Album and embrace it in the pantheon of what they now have released. But.
You the fact to that
they,
band.
But the fact that they when they did Load was like their Kiss Unmasked. It was like the bigger news was that they had cut their hair than that they had actually made a record.
Look at what was going on then. You
no,
know?
I like, get it. Like, I know why they did it, but I was like,
say an uncooler word in the world than metal.
Like, I know
you couldn't like. Pedophile was the word right above it. Like, it was like metal number two, pedophile number one. Like, that was how it was. So they were like, I feel bad for all those guys.
I feel bad for them now because all those images are still up online.
Oh, yeah.
And there's Kirk and Lars with eyeliner.
Yeah.
Looking all sad.
Trying to do the thing that they don't. That's part in, not to interrupt you, I swear, but that part in Some Kind of Monster where fucking Kirk just has the breakdown with the solos, you know, like, and Lars looks at him and he's like, yeah, maybe you don't need solos of our, and Kirk's like, our fucking name is Metallica. Yeah. The word metal is in our name. You know, like, he's like,
what the fuck am I going to do if I don't solo? Yeah. That's all I do.
I don't even play rhythm on the record.
You're fucking killing me, dude. You're fucking killing me.
Go buy some art. Yeah. Leave
me
alone.
I don't even get to play rhythm on the record. Just give me my solos. Yeah.
That's so funny. True. But, that, you know, it's poor, true. Poor band. Again, you know, like, we all know, every band is the fucking same. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter how much money the band has. Like, it's all the same. Like, it's the same dynamic single band.
Yep.
If I met Hetfield now, our comparable old selves, mine and his, I would be like, whatever, what's up, dude? Like, my 14-year-old self would be fucking...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, my exactly. Shoes would be filled with fucking...
Dude. I agree. He maintains all of his coolness. Yeah. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm the same way. I feel the same way. Like, that... At one point, that motherfucker... was more important to probably the four people in this room than any family member.
True.
Like,
what
he said, like, you would listen to him before you would listen to your dad. There was the moment.
Oh,
there
was, I
like,
see. Yeah,
maybe
yeah,
like
for
2 years there where you would be like, yeah, James, you tell me. I don't listen to that guy. He just pays for everything. What you're saying.
Yeah. But, and that's why for me,
Jason,
since our voices sound very similar, and I don't want anyone to think that Josh might say this. That's why.
I don't know what that's gonna mean.
That's why for me, the Hetfield vocal flip that happened at the Black Record was the larger knife in the heart for me.
I agree with that,
because James Hetfield, the reluctant singer. Rhythm guitar player, right? Because he tried to hire Danzig to sing for them at some point, right? Like, just like the guy who's the
imagine
the guy who doesn't even really kind of want to be there in some capacity. Like, he's like, I want to be Malcolm Young. Like, I just want to sit in the back and drink with like fucking coasters.
That made me only love him more.
I know. When I read that, I was like, dude, fucking rule, because your lyrics are great and you sing. It's awesome.
Yeah. And he looks great.
And he fucking was like awesome to take
the new Lemmy kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. The fucking long blonde hair, skinny dude with the just like, you know.
He's the quarterback. He's the quarterback who didn't hang out with the jocks.
Yeah. Right. And when you are so fucking badass that what it says on the sticker on your guitar is as important as any, you know, like, we all know the four assholes sitting in this room can tell you what that fucking guy's Explorer said.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's the eat fuck. There's the more beer. Yeah. You know, yeah. You're like, we're fucking idiots.
Yeah. That was like Pete Townsend's like the five.
Exactly.
Or the three. You're like, no, whatever.
We gave a shit for no reason. Like, we just gave a shit. You're like, man,
I was like, I'm gonna
so
play
cool.
Green Tortex Pigs because that's what
Heffy plays.
Then I'll be black, yeah, I'll be just black, like him. Black strap.
Yeah,
got a black knit like yeah. cotton yeah. strap. That's
Earth
it.
Earth 3, man. Earth 3.
Assholes. This yeah. this cabin is filled with assholes.
Well, when we played Download in 2004, there's this whole thing where Lars Ulrich couldn't make it.
Right.
So they had to find for the whole day during the whole day backstage. Because their Metallica world was sandwiched right with all the other dressing rooms next to catering. So all the bands were there. Korn, Slipknot, Slayer, everyone was there. And so they were basically not auditioning, but they were getting...
Like polling?
Drummers from different bands that to play a couple of songs. Yeah. So Joey Jordison played some songs. Lars's Tech played some songs. Lombardo played some songs.
Lombardo was nuts.
Yeah. So we were all there. Every one of the guys in all the bands, including myself, was just, we were all listening in because we could hear them going through.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it was, everybody was buzzing about
what
it.
What an experience.
Yeah. I was in seventh heaven because I was so close. So finally the time comes where they have to drive to the stage. So, you know, Kirk Hammett comes out and everyone's like, yeah! So basically I'm hanging out with like Hatebreed's there. Nikki Brides of Destruction are there. What was the not Hell Yeah, not Pantera, but
Damage Plan
was all there. All those dudes were all there, and of course everyone's kind of getting drunk. Mm-hmm. Kirk Hammett comes, Kirk, and Kirk like waves to his buds and whatever. Rob comes out. Rob actually like goes back to everybody, shakes like his bud's band, his friend's hands.
Right, well, because he's like the junior that got, you know, drafted to the varsity team.
So he's everybody's friend.
He's such a nice guy.
Yeah, and he's a nice guy. Absolutely. Hetfield comes out. No one says anything. Everyone parts ways. Yeah. I'm looking at the guys who I have albums of looking at James.
Yeah.
And there is so much respect.
Yeah.
And James is like focused on the limo. Yeah. He doesn't look at anybody. Nobody talks. No one says James. No one says anything. And he just comes out with a smile. He looks 8 feet tall.
Yeah.
And I just remember him going, all right. And he just walks. He doesn't make eye contact. No one wants to bug James.
So
it was
rad.
It was a great moment.
That's like that scene in fucking Goodfellas when he's a kid and he's like, one day they even carried my mom's groceries home for it. You know why? Out of respect. It's just like, you don't fucking talk to him.
You don't fuck with
him. He made you up. Yeah. He made up the whole this whole fucking festival he made up.
Yeah.
He made up the whole thing.
Yeah. That was a moment where I was like, wow, so all these dudes think exactly.
Yeah, that's what's crazy, right?
Yeah. To the point of when we were in LA at some point hanging out with Jim, we went to Downey, to the town that he lived in, to the black metal store in fucking Downey.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're like, he probably ate that McDonald's.
Yeah, like the first McDonald's ever's there.
Yeah.
By the way, in case you never want to eat it.
Yeah. But it's like
Hetfield and McDonald's comes from the same
Downey.
Town.
Yeah. Right, right. I think he's I don't know if he's
over
lost
1 billion served for both.
But I think his trademark look, he just hasn't kept it up the same way Lemmy has throughout all the years.
Yeah.
So that's why I think people are lost in terms of like the brand of that Hetfield look.
Well,
has kind of been lost because he cut off his hair.
His sleeves. He's got a tattoo to his knuckles.
Showed a lot of his personal life to everyone.
But the thing that was so awesome about Metallica was they had no tattoos. Cliff was the only one. He had one tattoo, and it was a Misfits skull.
That's a great point.
And you're like, I mean, not that the 80s wasn't a huge tattoo band time anyway, but still, like, it's a weird thing that Slayer and Judas Priest and Ozzy and Metallica and all the dudes who were big in the 80s who had no tattoos, really.
Ozzy did,
but not like sleeves.
Kerry
just like,
King did too. He did not. He wasn't like
not like now, he is now.
Not
like,
Dawn of Dusk
and not fucking and not Halford with the fucking head tattoo. It's just so interesting that they all went for the tattoos in like their 40s.
in like their like, third.
It's true.
And I noticed that later. Like, Arias has a sleeve, right?
Hetfield's got. Almost. Hetfield's heavily.
Hetfield's
tapped.
Oh, yeah. Super, to the neck. He's sleeve with the knucks and the knuckles, and he went into the rockabilly thing, yes, right? And yeah, he went that.
His car culture guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Which you can do when you can.
Kerry King turned into more of Kerry King.
Yeah.
If that was possible.
Yeah.
I'm not going to wear a spike wristband anymore. I'm just going to tattoo my.
That's another band that, like, that's
a tree on my knuckles.
That's another band that, like, at their best, at their, like, peak performance with the guys, with that core of dudes, it is a force that you can't put into words. I mean, like, and fucking Gary Holt is a fucking amazing guitar player, and he is going to see them with Gary is amazing, and it's still great.
And he's from the same line.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome. But, like, man, just talk about just what a force. Like, just such a fucking thing. Like, and, like, it's a bummer because, like, now it's become like a war cry, like a Slayer, or, like, you know, like, I don't know. There's like people. I remember when you couldn't, like, people, like, didn't even want you to know, you know, like, yes, you didn't want people exactly to know that you listened to that band, because you're like, you know what, I don't want the connotation that it's going to bring on to me by you, your opinion of
it was
me
a secret,
change.
Yeah, it was a secret,
yeah. Yeah, so it's just, it's funny now that it's, like, a thing, you know, like.
Well, I went to an all-boys Catholic school. And so there's this guy.
No wonder. No,
yeah. Well, there's this guy, and he didn't pick on me, but he would always, like, whatever. So one day he stole the Rain and Blood tape out of my bag. And I didn't know he did. I was just like, oh, fuck, I lost it. Then he brought it back the next day because it scared the shit out of me.
We were saying, Jim, you and I were recounting the other day how we saw, we were in the same show but didn't know each other, the So Far So Good So What.
No,
Megadeth.
It was
at the old Ritz.
It was right when it came out.
Right, and then they came back and played at the Capitol Theater in Passaic, because I saw that too.
But at the old Ritz, which is now Webster Hall.
With the Crumbsuckers.
It was Crumbsuckers and Megadeth right before they went to do Donington for the first time.
Right.
And that was the first set of shows without Chris Poland.
Yeah, well, Jeff, no, because that Young? Record, Jeff Young was on that record. I think I think it was the tail end, because Chris Poland was playing with him. So that was the tail end of the Pete Sells tour.
Was it?
Maybe.
Yeah,
yeah. Jeff
was,
Young. Yeah.
Jeff Young played was, on the so yeah. far.
Right.
So
okay,
far, so,
so
good,
was
they didn't
the,
play in the city. They played
right.
at the
right.
Capitol.
Right. Okay. So yeah. So it was right. the end and, of
yeah.
Pete Sells.
Yeah. That was Megadeth, Warlock, and Sanctuary at the Capitol Theater.
Yes.
of New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, we had Crumbsuckers. Yeah.
No, that was a different. That
I know,
was a
but I'm saying
tour.
That. Tour
yeah. I saw both
was Crumbsuckers, and my brother and I were so fucking. We were like, "Who's that dude? That's not Chris Poland." And they're like, "Oh, top man, Jeff Young." We're like, "What?
No.
What's going on? Crazy!
I want to see Chris Poland."
Yeah. And then I said to Jim, which I think I've told him before, like 3 weeks later, we went to see Circle Jerks at Irving Plaza, and they're like, "This is our new bass player, Chris Poland." And we're like, "What? What is going on?"
You're like theorizing about yourself. Like, he was just hanging out in New York, like, "Well, I don't know. What am I going to? Oh, hey, the guys in the Circle Jerks are here. What's up, dudes? New bass player?
Yeah. I'll play some bass in Circle Jerks." And we're like, "What is happening?"
That's the craziest thing, and like, only an LA story. Like, we moved, Emily and I from my band moved to LA and started our band, and then got a room at this place called Downtown Rehearsal, where all of these bands rehearse, like all the bands in LA rehearse. And the first time we go to pay our rent at the building, like, there was this other, some dude, Chris, I think was his name, Steve or something, and he was like, "Hey, when you pay your rent, pay Chris, the other guy here that runs the building." And I was like, "Okay." So I go to, like, the office that month, first month, to pay our rent, and it's fucking Chris Poland, like, running the fucking, like, rehearsal facility. And I was just like, you know, like, you have that moment where you see him, and then, like, I go to pay him, and I'm like, And then I'm like, nah, I'm not gonna ask him. Yeah. So I walk away, and then like I remember every time we'd get a notice on the door, like, we are fumigating for termites. Chris Paul and Emily from our band were like, grab that and like keep it. Like, ooh,
yeah, Chris Paul would sign that. And then she would, and then she would pay the rent every month.
Every month she'd be like, I'll pay the rent from now on.
I like Return to Metalopolis.
I like Chasing the Sun. All his solo stuff is good.
Next we're going to be talking about like Earth, Sun, Fire, whatever that Uli Roth I like that, man. I'm in Earth, Fire, Wind, or whatever that shit's called. Anyway.
There'll be some other confluence that will bring us together.
Hey, this
next
is
time
crazy.
On a plane, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. G5. We'll just rent one.
Yeah.
Well, this is great. Okay, we did it.
Yeah. Done.
We kind of...
Episode
did.
One.
It's a sensible accomplishment right there.
Yeah, we did what we were supposed to do. Start with talk about Metallica and see where it takes us. Ended with Chris Poland in the Circle Jerks.
As it does.
Awesome.
Awesome.